This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Chef Joanne Chang got her start baking chocolate chip cookies for her Harvard Mathematics Study Group. Following a brief foray into business consulting where she was still baking on the side, Chang went on to work for some of the best chefs in Boston and New York. Then she opened Flower, one of Boston's most beloved bakery cafes. 12 years later, and many, many thousands of chocolate chip cookies later, there are 4 Flower bakeries.
Joanne Chang now has a new cookbook called Flower 2. In it, she shares some of the cafe's most loved recipes and vegan vanilla mixed berry muffins and roast lamb with tomato chutney sandwiches to bitter sweet chocolate espresso terrine.
Mm. So, yes, delicious. And I should say some of them are right here in the studio now. But what really caught our eye is a special section in the back of the new book that, without fanfare or flair, it connects everything Chang has ever done, from the Bûche de Noël to those chocolate chip cookies. It's a chapter on basics, the foundational techniques and recipes that great kitchens are built on. And Chef Joanne Chang joins us now to demystify some of those basics. Welcome back to the show, Chef Chang.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Okay, it's great to have you. And I have to say that we could have talked for hours just about the other recipes that you have in the new book, Flower 2, because I was just at the Clarendon Street Flower.
Yes.
And I had the breakfast egg sandwich, and it was phenomenal.
Excellent. That is in this book.
It is in the book. So so I might try and recreate it at home. But before I can do that, the reason why I want to talk to you about basics is because, especially when it comes to baking, I feel like that's one of the main things that most cookbooks just presume that you have knowledge of. And yet, if you don't do it right, no other recipe is possible. So tell us from your perspective, why is it that mastering these basics are so important?
I totally agree with you. As somebody who did not go to cooking school or baking school and had to learn everything either through books or on the job, I feel like oftentimes the basics are overlooked. And that's one of the reasons why with this book, I wanted to take the basic recipes that you kind of need throughout the book and gather them in one chapter so that if you wanted to just focus on learning the basics, you could learn the foundation recipes that you needed in order to do all of these recipes. And so if you start with the basics, then pretty much every other recipe in here kind of follows.
Now tell me, is that what you, since you didn't go to cooking school, but you worked at so many terrific kitchens in both Boston and New York, I mean, is that where you got your education in the basics? Because in the introduction, you write in a lot of detail about your experiences there, but you don't necessarily say, oh, there was one dish in particular that I remember. It was more sort of technique and foundational knowledge.
Most definitely the recipes that I learned as my basics were learned in the various kitchens that I worked in. So, for example, one of the basic recipes is flour focaccia. It is the bread recipe that we use for all of our sandwiches and for the breakfast egg sandwich that you had the other morning. The flour focaccia was a recipe that I learned when I was the pastry chef at Rialto. It was their pizza dough recipe. And I saved it. I tucked it in my back pocket. And when it came time to open flour, I recreated it and I shaped it into a sandwich loaf. And now it's our sandwich bread.
So I'm looking at the recipe here. And it's actually very, very simple when you look at it. 1 teaspoon active dry yeast, 3 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 cup bread flour, 5 teaspoons granulated sugar, 2 teaspoons kosher salt, 1/2 cup of olive oil, a small handful of cornmeal for sprinkling on the baking sheet. So what's the mistake that people make when they try to assemble a simple list like that and they end up with a hard brick, like I sometimes do?
Well, what I've learned in both teaching baking and in my own learning and in teaching baking and in helping people as they work through the first book and then hopefully with this book is that a lot of times people don't read the recipe from start to finish before they start. And it's something that I counsel everyone before they decide they're going to cook or bake is read the recipe from start to finish. Make sure you actually have all the ingredients before you start the recipe. And then once you have that basic knowledge of where you're going, it's sort of like if you're driving without a map, it's great if you don't care where you end up, but if you know where you want to end up, you really need to follow a map. And that's how I view the recipe. Like the focaccia is very straightforward as long as you follow the recipe, but you do have to have that determination that you will read it and follow it through.
Well, talk to me about another one of the basics in here, and that's the puff pastry. Because honestly, that's something that, you know, when you have handmade puff pastry, it tastes exquisite, especially if it's made by someone like you who knows what they're doing. But it's also one of the first things that I personally would run to the store to just buy the pre-made stuff. I'm ashamed to admit it, but because, I mean, it's hard.
Well, it's not that it's that hard. In fact, one of the
maybe
great...
I'm just impatient.
One of the great victories of this book that I was thrilled was that they actually did put a pictorial in the end that shows how to make the puff pastry, because it's not that hard. And time-wise, it's actually not that much time. It is extended over a long period of time, but your actual time that you are working on the puff pastry is probably not more than 30 or 40 minutes total over the course of a day or over the course of maybe 6 hours. And it, as you can see, the ingredients, very, very basic. It's mm-hmm. just flour, salt, sugar, butter, a little bit of water. And the technique is so, when you make puff pastry by hand, it's really gratifying. You're right. You can just go to the store and buy puff pastry. And I've done that too. I will admit, sometimes I've done that too.
Okay, so I feel only slightly less shame because of that.
But one of the things I try to make clear in this book is that really you can enjoy cooking and eating so much more if you really buy the best ingredients. And by that, I don't mean going out and buying puff pastry. I mean buying great butter and getting some flour and making puff pastry and doing some of these basics at home. And once you have, I mean, the great thing about puff pastry is you can make a huge batch of it and store it in your freezer and it will last. Mm. And so taking the time to find in the day to make a batch of puff pastry and then put it in the freezer. And then it's just like going to the grocery store when you need it, except it's right there in your freezer.
So in the recipe, under the special equipment section, you say a lot of patience needed. And so what do you have an insider's tip on the technique on what's the best way to roll it out? Because you got to roll and fold.
I forgot that I put that part in the book. The best advice I can give people who are looking to make puff pastry is you really want to own the rolling pin. And so there is a lot of rolling and folding. And if you're tentative at all, the dough will push back. It sounds crazy, but it really will. If you're kind of just hesitant and you're a little bit nervous, the dough's not going to do anything. You take that pin and you pound it down. You pound down that dough, you pound down that butter, and you roll. I mean, when I'm making puff pastry, I am sweating. I am on my tiptoes with all of my body weight pushing the dough out. But it's so gratifying when it all comes together and you can actually physically see all of the layers that you've created with butter and dough, butter and dough, butter and dough. And then when it goes into the oven and it poofs up and it's like shatteringly crisp, it's really amazing.
Yeah. You know, the last couple, we have about less than 2 minutes to go here. I wanted to ask you about, I know other people have before, but I noticed that you, in the new book, Flour 2, you dedicated it to your parents.
I did.
So are they the source of your passion for food?
Oh, definitely. My parents, that's all they think about. When we are eating breakfast, we are planning lunch. And then at lunch, we're thinking about dinner. And then at dinner time, we're all thinking about what we're going to have for breakfast. It's so funny because my husband, who did not grow up in such a food-centric family as I did, is stunned at how often we talk about food. Our vacations are planned around food. I mean, everything we do is food-oriented.
And so, I was about to say that they must be thrilled with the fact that you've become so successful in a really, really difficult, I mean, industry. Being a successful restaurateur is no easy thing.
They are very happy. I think in the beginning, they were a little bit nervous. They didn't know if I knew what I was doing. I didn't know if I knew what I was doing. Mm. But, you know, it's been 13 years and now they're very, very happy. And they come and visit a lot. And they don't come to visit me. They come to visit the bakeries and the restaurant. That's literally all they do is go to all the bakeries and the restaurant. And every now and then they'll pop in and see me.
And finally, you know, in the introduction, we talked about something you mentioned in the book, and that is that you first got your start by baking chocolate chip cookies for your Harvard study group.
Correct. Yep.
The recipe for the cookies is not in here.
It's not in this one, but it is in the first book.
Okay. That's what I was wondering about.
Most definitely.
And
yes.
They're still amongst your most popular
items. Yeah, we bake hundreds and hundreds of chocolate chip cookies a day.
Okay. Well, Chef Joang Chang is the chef owner of four Flour Cafe bakeries now across Boston and Cambridge. The new book is Flour 2, Indispensable Recipes for the Cafe's Most Beloved Sweets and Savories, including a great chapter on basics that you should master in the kitchen. Chef Chang, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And before we go today, an update on a couple of those injured in last month's marathon bombing. They are two brothers from Stoneham who each lost their right leg above the knee in the second blast near the finish line.
Paul and J.P. Norden were taken to different hospitals and each had multiple surgeries. The brothers were reunited for a weekend at Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital.
Now, as the younger brother, Paul, gets ready to leave, we hear how they envision a new normal life after the marathon bombings. WBUR's Martha Biebinger has our story.
J.P., who's 33, and Paul, who's 31, have been best friends since as far back as they can remember. They're both single and work in the construction business. Their friendship has included lots of contests.
I won in everything.
That's the younger brother, Paul.
Yeah, we're competitive, so. But,
I'll be an outpatient here, so I'll be back and I'll visit him every day.
I want to be where he's at already. I just know it's not possible yet, so we'll get there, though.
With lots of help, the brothers' main message for bystanders, rescue workers, and the nurses and doctors who kept them alive is thanks.
I went to Brigham and Women's, and I would not want to be any other place in the world. I thought they were unbelievable from, you know, nurses to doctors to everything. They were just unreal.
Paul slides the mic away from JP.
I wanted to say I personally thought Beth Israel was the best hospital, but just letting that be known.
The Nordens say they can laugh a month after the bombings because friends and family members don't let them get down.
The nurses must go nuts here. We have 30 visitors a day, but they're the ones that keep us going positive.
The Nordens both had complicated amputations, says Dr. Ross Safant, Spalding's VP for Medical Affairs. As the wounds heal, doctors and nurses are shrinking and shaping the stumps for the best fit for prosthetics.
They talk about wanting to resume their competitive sporting life. We want to help them do that. And so there may be need to be variations in fit or type of prosthesis that they need and specialized training to do what they do, to do what they enjoy doing in life.
Paul, who is ready for discharge, says he's not sure what the future will look like.
I've had a couple of bad days, but all the support and, like, you know, our family's here constantly, so it's all good. I'm ready to move on. I feel great. I feel like myself. It's just a different normal.
JP shrugs and agrees that he struggles sometimes when thinking about his new life.
But, you know, overall, I'm very happy. I am. I know it's weird and it sounds weird, but it's probably changed me for the better a little bit. It made me, you know, realize how great people are. And so, I mean, I'm happy overall. I really am.
JP is a little worried about his plan to move in with his mom while he gets used to living independently again.
Just thinking about going back to mom's is all. It'll be all right to go back to the zoo temporarily. It'll be all right.
Paul can't wait to see his dogs. They're boxers, Bella and Baxter.
I want to walk my two dogs or in a wheelchair. However I can do it, I want to walk my dogs, though, because I haven't seen them for a month. Well, I saw them once, but I haven't been with them, so I really do want to walk my dogs.
The Nordens face a lot of uncertainties. The cost of prosthetics will be in the $30,000 to $90,000 range for limbs that wear out every few years. But they are confident they'll return to work, family, and fun together.
WBUR's Martha Biebinger reporting on the recovery of Paul and J.P. Norden.
Well, Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Jessica Alpert, Amory Sievertson, Dina Rosendorf, and Alex Kingsbury.
Our interns are Darian Gray and Ava Aguado.
Tim Skog is our technical director.
The executive producer of Radio Boston is Mark Navin.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.